Welcome to the Weekly Squeak, your weekly geeky squeak with me, Christian Chella. And hopefully you can now see me. Yay! I was hoping to have it last week, but it didn't quite work out. I'm still tweaking a lot of things. I have acquired some lighting, so I'm not obviously using it right now, as you can probably tell by my slightly dark demeanor. But I'm hopefully setting that up over the next week or so, and then subsequent videos, you will see me much more clearly, much more crisply. But I now have a lovely boom mic up here. You can't see it, which is the right thing, which is what I wanted. You can't see the microphone. My camera is down here. I still want to position that. I actually have a choice of two recording locations. I'm still trying to figure out. I'm recording from home right now. I'm trying to set up actually to mostly record in my office. But the background is not that interesting. This side of the room is actually much more interesting, but not ideal for setting up recording, unfortunately. Anyway, enough of that. This issue, I always call it an issue, this episode, this video, this podcast, this newsletter, I have a repeat interview with someone who I spoke to about 2 years ago, Robert Reeves. When I last spoke to Robert, he was working at Datical. Now he's working at Liquibase. They're the same company, just in case you're wondering. Datical rebranded or acquired, merged with, became part of a whole bunch of different things. We covered off in the interview with Datical. And Datical is about kind of bringing DevOps practices to databases and specifically database administrators. So we talk about that a bit later. We do have video for those of you watching on video. He is extremely well lit and looks very, very good. And I was still experimenting at the time and looked pretty terrible. But anyway, it's early days with my video right now. But I think this bit of video is fine. But first, before we begin, here are my links for the week. I have a small selection this week. And actually, two of them. W and an M sometimes look similar when you're looking at a 16 by 16 pixel favicon. So I'm going to do two from Wired first, actually specifically Wired UK. Most of the time whenever I am mentioning Wired Reads, I subscribe to the UK newsletter, although I'm pretty sure there's a lot of content here. So the first is from Victoria Turk, I think she's still the editor of Wired UK, about Zoom took over the world. This is what happened next. And she's mostly referring, so this is from August, but she's mostly referring to a earnings call in June, very beginning of June. And I guess Zoom has almost personally become a word like Googling. Weird bit, it used to be Skyping, I think. And lots of people are now using Zoom, even though they never knew it existed. But a lot of us know it's existed for some time. In fact, I'm not sure I mentioned it here in this article, but Zoom has existed for at least 5 or 6 years, if not longer, but got plunged into the spotlight in the current situation, of course. Not ready for it in the slightest, and had to adapt and grow and change very, very quickly. And actually, I think they did an admirable job on that front. They did adapt very quickly. The interesting thing with Zoom is it has a lot of good features if you pay. Some other platforms are better if you do things if you don't pay. I have been discovering this as I'm trying to do video interviews with people. Audio is already a problem, but tools like Audio Hijack and Zencast have helped me do that for some time. Capturing video of people is quite difficult. Zoom can do it quite well if you pay. And this is a problem I'm still looking into and the solution I'm still looking to solve, as you'll probably see from my video interviews over the next few weeks. But I guess this article is sort of a coming of age, maybe a full stop. I'm not really sure what it is, but it's kind of a recap of what has happened to the company in the past year. And actually, let's look at some numbers here. In April, they had over 300 million daily meetings, which is up from December 2019 at 10 million. It has not break down, I don't think, how many of those were paid accounts. But if we look at the numbers again, quarter ending April the 30th, 2020, total revenue, this is a quarter, of 328 million, 169% increase. But 300 million at, we got, 300 million daily meetings, that I think starts to show that not everybody is paying. And of course, that's also the way Zoom works. Not everybody pays in a company. You know, there's one person pays and other people get it for free, that kind of thing. Be interested to see some more specific metrics about how those relate, maybe. And it also talks about companies like GitLab, who I've spoken to a few times, who have always been remote. I've worked remotely for the past at least 4 years, I think. It's not particularly unusual to many. And a lot of us who have witnessed other people doing it have kind of, welcome to the party, folks. It's anyway, and this is an interesting article just wrapping up kind of where they have got to and where they will go to next. And actually, this feeds off nicely from an article that was also on wired.co.uk, which I think I covered in last week's Weekly Squeak, about how it was like one of those careful what you wish for moments. Lots of people were always saying, oh, I really want to work from home. And now you have no choice. People are kind of saying, actually, I'm good. It wasn't quite what I expected it to be. And there is an interview here with Prithviraj Chowdhury, who's from Harvard Business School, who also talks about, he's also been one of these people who was an early proponent of working from home and is now, was always pragmatic about it, I think. He might have even been the same person who was interviewed in the last article, actually. And there's a lot of discussion here of their competitors. Cisco Webex is still popular, despite, I really do not like Cisco Webex and very rarely find anybody who does, which is strange. Teams is catching up. Google Meet is catching up. And many others, but still Zoom still seems to have this this mindshare. Anyway, recapping the quarter that they probably never expected to have a read of this article from Victoria Turk. And I'd love to hear your thoughts. Do you like Zoom? Do you hate the fact that people use it to mean having a video call? Do you hate that people sometimes you have on Telegram or WhatsApp and you're just speaking to one person, propose let's have a Zoom call, when you're kind of like, we can also just talk on Zoom or WhatsApp, we don't have to. And coincidentally, Telegram just announced finally video calls. Using video conferencing software for a one-on-one chat about life is maybe overkill. I don't know. Anyway, tell me your thoughts on Zoom. Tell me your thoughts on the article, and I'd be interested to hear. You can probably talk to me on Zoom if you want, but most of my office hours is actually done through Meet. Next, another article from Wired UK from Sean Williams about the current protests and the technology relating to them in Belarus. I was actually in Belarus possibly about this time a year ago, actually. I'd have to double check, but it was definitely summer because it was warm and sunny. Might have been slightly later. I can't entirely remember. And they do call Belarus Europe's last dictatorship. It's a very strange place. They remind me a lot of Singapore in that it's very clean and very ordered. And this is because it's basically a dictatorship. And if people do anything slightly wrong, then they're put on sort of community service to clean the streets and things like that. So this odd kind of thing that a lot of foreigners spot is actually something that irritates locals, I discovered, because the reasons it's so clean and ordered are not pleasant ones. And then thanks to the current president, I think. I don't know what he calls himself, but Alexander Lukashenko, claiming he'd won the latest round of elections and he's been leader for 26 years, despite an opposition leader surging in popularity. And actually her origin story is quite fascinating. She sort of came out of nowhere to become a very popular opposition leader. She's now currently, I think, in exile in Lithuania. Lithuania is very, very close and, of course, is part of Europe. In fact, the flight from Vilnius to Minsk is 30 minutes, which was an insane flight. But as a certain passport holders, that's the only choice you have, actually. Anyway, that's another story. I talk about Telegram. There's a subtle connection I made there between the two posts without even realizing. I'm using Telegram a lot, which is interesting because Telegram, I think, is mostly sort of Russian-created, and a lot of the protests are around Lukashenko's kind of, well, not necessarily his Russian connections, but he is more pro-Russia than the opposition, I think. I don't know, this gets kind of muddy, just because you're pro or anti-Russian doesn't necessarily equal like the current leadership of the opposition or the right versus the left or anything like that. It's a little bit more muddled than that. But yeah, they all turn to Telegram. Telegram is quite popular in the sort of Russian, ex-Russian, Eastern European diaspora, shall we say. And the internet was shut down for a period of time and blocking lots of things. Somehow Telegram got through. People kept it going somehow. And they were organizing. There was no real person in charge of the protests apart from Telegram. And I don't mean that the company was in charge. It was just like fairly dynamic groups just self-organizing for protests, which is quite fascinating. Leading to about 100,000 people in Minsk city center. And actually one interesting thing the article does point out is that there wasn't so much happening outside of the city centers, which is not that uncommon, but yeah. And how this will play out, where this will go, we remain to be seen. They're kind of squashed between the EU and Russia, politically and physically and geographically. So how it will play out is quite interesting, but they are actually a very technically minded people, which is why cutting off the internet was such a kind of desperate act in some respects. They have a lot of very talented engineers there, often an outsourcing destination, but much like Ukraine, they're very well educated, very smart, and often a bit bored with working as outsourcing employees. So turning their minds to other challenges. It's sort of in the same way that on a positive way that the Ukrainian startup scene is buzzing. I think there was enough motivation plus knowledge in Belarus for this to happen very, very easily and get around blocks in technology from people who don't really understand how it works. So we'll see how this goes. If you would like a bit more detail about especially how they kept Telegram working and some of the other networks, have a look, have a read. Tell me what you think. Have you been to Belarus? What do you think will happen next? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Okay, one here from Adobe's Medium. Strange source, I know. This is actually kind of basically about the retirement of PhoneGap. Nitrobi PhoneGap, Adobe PhoneGap, Apache Cordova. This piece of software that kind of broke the mold in bringing cross-platform development. Initially to mobile, but then it led to things like Electron, ideas like Electron and things like that. It's actually kind of how I got back into web development, which is why this has made my list of articles. PhoneGap, Nitrobi PhoneGap as it was then, was kind of what got me into mobile development. I used to run a meetup, but then got me a job as an editor on a mobile development website, and kind of sort of opened the doors for me being who I kind of am today. So I have a little bit of a soft spot for it, even though I have not touched it in years. Beginning in 2008. I actually thought it was older than that. Interesting. But it's not really needed anymore, I suppose. So PhoneGap and PhoneGap Build, the commercial services, will be retired in October. Cordova will obviously continue to exist. I wonder how many people still use it now with React Native and NativeScript and just plain old JavaScript these days. I'm not sure. But anyway, I found it quite an interesting moment in time to see that its time is now over. Okay, firstly, something quite different. This is from the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. I have no idea why these posts popped up on my feed. This is actually from 2015 by Ellen Bradbury and Sandra Blakesley. The harrowing story of the Nagasaki bombing mission. A little bit different from what I normally talk about, I know. This has been a subject that's always kind of interested me for various reasons. Mostly because my grandfather actually fought in Burma against the Japanese, not in Europe. And he always claims that he was flying away from Japan when they dropped the bombs, which I'm not entirely sure if my youthful memory or his old man memory is, that's completely true. But anyway, it's always been something that fascinated me, and then why they came to this decision. Oh dear, bit of background as there. I do apologize. It is bin collection day. Anyway, but this article is a very long and fascinating reportage back on some of the people from on and on some of the people involved in the Nagasaki bombing mission, not the Hiroshima one. And just how, and it never ceases to amaze me how this is the case in so many times, how haphazard it was, how ramshackle it was, how it nearly didn't work, how it nearly failed dozens of times, and these sorts of things. And some would argue maybe it should have, but who knows what that could have led to. Anyway, they still had an atomic weapon. If the plane had crashed or something like that, it would have potentially caused just as much damage. So, yeah, it's quite interesting. And you almost have to remind yourself at the end of the article, like, what it led to sometimes, because it almost sounds like a boy's own comic at times in this article. But, of course, it led to a lot of destruction, which we should not forget. But still, if these sorts of moments in history interest you and the kind of reality of them, then have a read. Okay, ending on something slightly lighter. I don't know. This is actually from Rolling Stone, Rob Sheffield. This is about the final days of the Beatles. Yes. Mostly relating to the fact that I did not realize this. Peter Jackson is making a film based on a lot of footage from the final days of the Beatles. I think footage that was never released or was released, but no one ever really saw it. It's slightly unclear. Which I kind of look forward to watching. And it talks about, it's kind of another case of, you know, like a story that you kind of know without knowing the details. And when you know the details, you realize how much is abstracted in kind of history sometimes. And that things are not always what they appear to be, you know. You think that things come to a crashing end, but they rarely do. They come to a kind of stumbling end. And the sort of last months, years of the Beatles are almost like that. And it's something that the article reiterates over and over again, is they were still a group of friends, but they just could not seem to work with each other anymore. And they were kind of holding on to this friendship, but didn't really know why. And they would annoy each other, and they couldn't seem to create what they wanted to anymore, but they still kind of liked each other. And just sort of, and then you had external parties. I don't want to get into the whole adage of the wives ruined it and this kind of thing, but other people in their lives now as well, changing the way they acted with each other. And yeah, to some of the, again, I suppose, like this band that at the time and for a very long time and still are such an influential and large band, just how in those days, especially how amateurish it kind of all was and how they were still real people. Yeah, the reality of a situation like this. And I think an interesting fact you always have to remember with the Beatles is that as successful as they were not as successful as they could have been had they come now, kind of thing, because a lot of the vehicles for that level of fame and success didn't really exist yet, and artists didn't know how to handle it, and managers would rip you off and all this kind of stuff, and this plays a lot into the story too. But yeah, even if you don't like the Beatles, it's still just kind of a fascinating final days coverage of I guess a group of people you think you know everything about, or every story has been told, but there's still kind of more details you can find and can still find quite fascinating. And I look forward to actually watching this movie. I think some of the footage would be quite fascinating to see. And I think they've actually managed to clean it up and stuff like that. So it's more palatable than it might have been when it was first made, actually. Okay, that was my links for the week. Now, here's my interview with Robert Reeves from Liquibase.
Pain. Pain is instructive. And so, you know, I've always been a get the software out the door person. That's all hyphenated. And so we used to call it software configuration management. You know, build master, release manager, you know, all this stuff. And one day I was really struggling. I was working at an ISV and they had a product that ran J2EE. So you can date it. And it ran on WebSphere and WebLogic.
Mm-hmm.
And our customers would take this ear file and install it and have to run a script. And it was a real pain in the ass for me to make sure that my customers didn't dork up their app server. And so that, 2005, we started a company called Furnace, very early DevOps tool. Started the same year, I think, as Puppet, it was just one of those things where it would look at the app server and say, okay, what do we need to change and change it? And whether it was WebSphere, WebLogic, JBoss, it would fix it all up. Cool, you know? And we wound up selling that company to BMC in the last recession, 2009, our biggest customer was Walmart, and I was hanging out in Bentonville. Again, I'm from Texas, and I said, no, I'm going to make sure they're successful because I speak hillbilly. And I went up there. And it's great. You got and you have all these people in Bentonville, Arkansas, speaking with Southern accents about really technical stuff. You know, it's so incongruous, you know.
I don't know if you've ever saw Horton Catch Fire.
Oh, no, I haven't. It's
they're
on the list.
They're kind of a couple. I think they're in somewhere in the South, but it's somewhat similar.
Yeah. It's just, you listen to this person, talk about really technical stuff, but it sounds like the next thing they could be talking about is hunting and fishing. It's insane. But I was hanging out there and talking to our users, our customers, and they said, man, this is great. It's working wonderfully. But what about the database? Are you doing anything about that? And I said, oh, well, absolutely. It's on the roadmap. It wasn't on the roadmap. I asked them, well, what would you like it to do? And they said, well, look, if we're accelerating application releases, we need to accelerate the database schema changes because what's the point? It's great. Now we could press a button, or the machine just automatically releases after certain conditions are met. Okay. But I still have to, call Jerry and Stephanie, the DBAs, to update the database. What's the point? And spent my time at BMC, and we decided to start Datacle to solve this problem. And, rhymed with radical, had DAT at the beginning. Sure, why the hell not? But while we were starting the company, we found Liquibase.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, we are totally basing on this open source stuff. Even brought in Nathan Voxland, the project founder, to be our chief architect. Cool. This is great. But, 5-6 years go by and we realize that nobody gives a shit about Datacle. Nobody cares.
Okay.
So we stopped calling the company Datacle because we were tired of, people would, we talk to people and say, well, Datacle does X, Y, Z. It's wonderful. And they say, well, how does it compare to Liquibase? And we'd have to say, look, we are Liquibase. Go ahead and use it. Find out. And there's a lot of people that use it. And I think it goes back to, was it Martin Mikos, MySQL CEO, long time ago said, some people have more money than time. Some people have more time than money. If you have a product that doesn't help both, you don't have a product.
Mm.
And so that's what we've decided to do. We're going to double down on the open source community. We have a middle tier offering, Liquibase Pro, and then we have Liquibase Enterprise, which is the Datacle DB stuff. CloudBees should have called themselves Jenkins years ago. Can you imagine MongoDB calling themselves something else?
Not now, but yeah, you're right.
but that's the thing. We looked at it and we were like, no, this is the time. We got to make this change. So, yeah, you know, Datacol is dead. Long live Liquibase. But nothing's changed.
So just to understand then, prior to that, they were basically the same thing, or you had community? Oh, okay.
We had the community open source free stuff, and then we had Datacol DB, which had the rules engine, enforcing standards, forecast, a monitoring console, you know, see status and reports on changes in the state of your databases. So that was like the big, heavy enterprise stuff and big, big companies, you know, top three banks in the United States use it. Top four insurance companies. Obviously, FinServ is big. That's where all the data is. But, you know, we realized that there needed to be something in the middle. And so we took a lot of those features that were in Datacol DB and put them into Liquibase, and we have Liquibase Pro now. So it has a lot of the goodies and kind of ease of use, you know, little dessert topping on top. Of course, it's the support, the fact that people have a throat to choke. Oh my God, it's not working.
Yep.
You know, we're Stack Overflow, and is it going to cut it? You need support.
Okay. So let's go back a step. I was actually just checking the last time we spoke was 2.5 years ago. So, oh no, no, 2 and a bit years ago. So some time ago. So I think we can assume that, that a lot of people who, won't have read or listened to whatever I wrote about you last time. You mentioned it very briefly, and I have limited experience in this kind of world too. Anyone who comes from the old kind of school way of developing applications where there was a lot more tied to a database will kind of understand this problem of you know, you have a lot of ways to migrate code now, but then there's always this sticky point of moving data and you know, certain applications, something like Rails for ages had the migrations concept, and now you have kind of other concepts and things like that. But, you know, that's still a relatively new-ish world to a lot of, especially enterprise.
Isn't that awful? Isn't it awful that it's...
Well, you know.
It's like, you know... parents discovering TikTok. You know, it's like, where you been?
I'm not a parent and I still haven't discovered it. So wasn't that MySpace? No. Describe maybe a little bit more graciously than me the people you're trying to help and the typical problems they're trying to solve and the workflow they're trying to follow and how you fit into that.
Well, I mean, I think you described it just fine. You know, there's all sorts of new ways of deploying apps, Docker containers, you know, microservices. It's all about speeding the development of new features and speeding the deployment of those. So look at Spinnaker. All right. Yep. Spinnaker is black magic. It is amazing. All right, I've got my microservices running in a container, and you're going to use, hey, Spinnaker, you're going to use a list of deployment mechanisms, rolling, blue, green. Yeah. I forget what the third one is.
Canary, I don't know.
Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff. And then there's the rollback aspects of it where it's like, oh, well, you know, the past three versions, you know, were at 7 milliseconds response time. And this new one you released is at 70. That's an order of magnitude greater. We're going to roll this back for you. And so that's amazing. So developers aren't tasked with worrying about the build and deployment and all this stuff. And we don't have folks like me, software configuration manager, whatever, you know. The middlemen, change control boards, you know, reviewing all this crap. But, you know, we still have it for the database. There's nothing there that, yeah, okay, databases have state. And yeah, that data is pretty valuable.
Yeah.
and we don't want anything to go wrong. So, you know, the trick is not to have two paths. It's what can we do to get these data changes, data schema, the actual data changes deployed the same way as the application. The solution is not to throw more DBAs at the problem. It's not to work harder. It's to work smarter. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to take all these learnings from DevOps and Agile and distributed architectures and apply it to the database. It's not hard, but it is, you know, the biggest problem with it is people. You know, they always say DevOps is about culture, and it could not be more true when we're talking about the database.
Yeah. So I always like to kind of start with the open source version and work up.
Sure.
So if I was to take the open source version, the Liquibase community, I think you.
Yeah.
What would I do? I install it somewhere, and what's the kind of setup process for me trying to bring that into my workflow?
Well, I think the easiest way to install this is to use a Docker container.
Mm-hmm.
So Docker run Liquibase/Liquibase. Mm-hmm. We do have a pull request to make it an official image. So if you want to weigh in on it, give it a thumbs up on GitHub. I'd appreciate it. Mm-hmm. But, what it will do is we'll just run Liquibase and shut down. All right. So you got to give it some arguments. And let's say, look, the reason why nobody uses Liquibase on day one of a project.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. Yeah.
It's very unfortunate, but most people do not buy a burglar alarm until they've been burgled. You know, it's sad. But such is life, such as humans, you know, we're just, you know, big dumb pleasure monkeys. And, you have a database that's been around for a while and you're fed up with updating it. So the first thing you have to do is you have to create what we call a change log. This is, just a file that represents all the changes that are already persisted to the database. Mm. And it winds up becoming a ledger. You know, it's kind of like, you know, any kind of financial management software, you know, connects to your bank account, pulls down transactions, and you have a ledger. Yay. Mm-hmm. Great. Now you have to assert that database and the ledger, the changelog, are in sync. And so the first thing is Liquibase, you know, you run the Docker container, generate changelog. It'll spit out this ledger, this changelog mm-hmm. file. Okay. Then you do changelog sync. And it'll create a meta table called database changelog. And it'll say, okay, these are all the changes that are in the database. Great. We're now done. Check that into source code control. Now you need to make a change. Update the changelog, add a new table, add a column, whatever, update a stored procedure, add it at the bottom. And then the next time you run Liquibase, it'll say, we have a new change. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try and run that against the database. Mm-hmm. If it's successful, you don't have any SQL errors, you know, blah, 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 it will add a new row to the database changelog table and you're done.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So generate changelog sync, get to work.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, how smart is that? Like just to understand this can work around live data sets as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it needs, the database has to be up and running.
Yeah.
You know, to connect. And it plays go fish with the database. Do you have any tables? Yes. Mm-hmm. Give them to me and tell me all about them. Tell me about your views. Now, here's the challenge, though, for some folks. Okay. Liquibase was originally built to be cross-platform.
Mm-hmm.
So Nathan actually wrote this like 06 because he had a he was working at an ISV that had an application that would run on SQL Server and Oracle. Same like what we were talking about before the recording, you know, the previous company Furnace, you know, deploying app to WebSphere and WebLogic. He had the same problem with the database and he was jealous, envious of Ruby on Rails, but he's they're writing in Java. They don't have that. So it's like, okay, I'm going to write this. And you know, Eric Raymond, right? It all starts with a developer has an itch they can't scratch and solves their problem. So the challenge is that, like, for example, packages in Oracle, that only exists in Oracle land. We Liquibase open source community doesn't support that.
Okay.
Now you could still do that. You can use a SQL tag or a SQL file tag to have your package SQL script, but it won't put it in the structured document. That's where Liquibase Pro comes in. So we have added extended object support in Liquibase Pro. We've added some clever rollback features. There's still rollback in Liquibase community, but it's a little far more feature rich. Like there's a targeted rollback. It's kind of like Git cherry pick.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, crap. I rolled out these 12 changes. Change 7 sucks. I need to roll that back. All right. So I don't have to roll back, you know, 12 to 7 and then apply 8 to 12. That's dumb. So we have targeted rollback. Of course, world-class support, out-of-the-box integrations that we support. But that's, you know, how smart is it? Damn, it's been around since 06. The biggest banks, the biggest insurance companies, hell, Salesforce uses it, the community edition. AWS uses it. I know the Route 53 team uses Liquibase. So, good enough for them.
Fair enough. And so let's just dig into what gets added as you go up from the community edition. You mentioned the rollbacks. I'm actually quite intrigued by looking across all the paid for versions, the commercial versions, database drift detection. What is that?
Ooh. Well, look, you know, sometimes bad things happen to good databases. You know, it's so I got a 9-year-old, right? And he is just a force of nature. But he is really good about taking care of his things and his toys. However, I've seen his classmates and individually, they are wonderful. They are just darling, empathic, wonderful children. But you put them together and they are just awful. Okay. They will tear up anything. And the same thing with databases. All right. You've got a lot of people with the ability to change a database. You're going to have regression to the mean. It's going to be bad. And so when you have a bunch of people making changes, especially manually, because they're human, they make mistakes, they forget, oh, I forgot to update the other database. And so you start to have this drift where you have two environments diverge. You might have production, which is locked down, and we have a hardcore process. And then you might have tests, which are a little more restrictive, but every once in a while, we make changes. And then dev, which is chaos. Okay. It's like Mardi Gras. So a lot of fun, but very messy. So you need the ability. hey, who changed this? What has changed? What's going on? Because with databases, it's really hard. I can't. How do you tell what the difference is? What is the difference between this table and that table? Now,
yeah.
I can do dbeaver. I can do diffs and stuff like that. But I still got to, and a bunch of other tools do this, you know, Toad from Quest. Okay. You know, our friends at Idera have tools. They're great. But I need a human. Mm-hmm. And our mantra has always been at Liquibase, has always been, we don't sell software. We sell piano recitals, little league games, date night, all the stuff you want to do, but you can't because you're stuck dealing with a stupid database. And so a lot of this functionality exists, but what we're doing is making it, we're automating it. Mm-hmm. So that humans can just get out of this and do what humans are really good at, which is solving hard problems, being creative, not just handling one ticket after another. That's terrible. That's soul crushing. It's awful.
Fair enough. Okay. So apart from the name change in the past 2 years since we last spoke, what else have you added? Any major features that weren't present then that you'd like people to know about?
Well, we've two things. The easy one is NoSQL database support.
Okay.
And so we've really focused on, with the change from Datacle to Liquibase, the first thing we did, well, okay, the first thing we did was change the name.
Yep.
But we really wanted to have a focus on building from the left.
Okay.
All right, build from the left, meaning new features and functionality get put into the community edition first. Mm-hmm. That is to reward the community and encourage them to provide new features and functionality, which is exactly what happened with Mongo. Mm-hmm. Had some cats, just randos. Hey, you want MongoDB support? We built it. I was like, what? Tell me about this. And like, yeah, you know, we work at MasterCard and, you know, I thought you might want this. Is that cool? And we're like, yeah. And it is so slick. It is awesome. Okay. And battle tested.
Yeah.
And so and also support for Snowflake, you know, cloud native databases, things like that. Cassandra. And so all this stuff's coming in from the community. It's wonderful. So that is a big focus. So we're going to start. It's out. You can use it as an extension. But we're putting it through our testing process, much like Red Hat does with Fedora. Mm-hmm. Hey, Fedora, bleeding edge, free, tear it up. Your bank. might want RHEL. You might want to throw it to Chuck. All right. And it's a little slower. But all this stuff is vetted over in the consumer side, the community side, rather. But that's all fine and good. But we've got something coming out, which I saw the alpha on Friday, and it is so slick. So if you go to liquibase.com/hub, you could see a little bit about it. A lot of marketing stuff. But it has a nice video from my co-founder, Pete, with he's actually showing the wireframes. And he recorded. So when he did the wireframes, he runs product. He's our product leader. And he did the video first. Then he shared it with the company. Mm-hmm. He went to the community first. He didn't talk inside. We didn't have a blue ribbon community. We've really taken to heart GitLab's transparency and really trying to model that or follow that. They're modeling that. So what it is you can have Liquibase and it's already working and that's great. We're happy it's satisfying you. All right. That's really cool. But you might want to take advantage of the status and reporting in Hub. So every time Liquibase runs, it will call a web service, mm-hmm. and just say, hey, I did this stuff. This is the state of the database. So we don't need a connection to the database. Just Liquibase needs to be able to call out. All right. We don't need poke holes in firewalls or, you know, no agents or BS like that. All right. And so it calls out and it says, I did this. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, of course, you got to log in, create an account, get an API key. That's all you have to do. You add it to your properties file. And so it knows, you know, where to put the data. Then you can log in and you can see what happened. Mm-hmm. What did some, what'd you do? And that right there, we think is just beyond cool. Just being able to have a website that's like, okay, and it's free to use. We're releasing it and just go ahead. Now, you know, you want to take advantage of some other features or you want to use more. Yeah, you got to pay for it. Kind of like GitHub. Yeah, free repos. They just got to be world readable.
Okay.
You know, okay. You want to keep that stuff quiet, you know, to yourself. Well, all right. You got to pay for that privilege.
Yeah. So it's sort of a centralized place for if you imagine your various databases as like GitHub repositories, it's kind of like your GitHub or GitLab profile page kind of thing. Okay. And I mean, how extreme with this do you want to go? Is it a something that you're just testing for customers, or is it almost, could it be a kind of, I don't know, a database collaboration project place like GitHub and GitLab? I don't know if that's even something people want, but yeah.
I'm not sure either. We've got a lot of work to even be included in that pantheon.
Not for sure, yeah.
But look, at the end of the day, we know that developers are going to solve problems.
Yeah.
And they're in charge, rightfully so. Yeah. Stephen O'Grady, what has it been, 5 years, 6 years? He wrote the New Kingmakers.
Yeah.
Developers are in charge. And so, you know, for a while when we started Datacle, yeah, it was CIOs making the decision and getting an ELA purchase and, you know, yeah. And that was fun. You know, going to a lot of meetings, which I do enjoy in my sweater and t-shirt and they're wearing suits. That's fun. Oh, yeah.
I think they're used to it now a bit more.
I get to play the CTO, the wacky co-founder CTO. But, what we want is, look, use Liquibase, solve the problem. It's free. If you want to use Liquibase Pro, cool. Great. We got your back. If not, no problem. You know, we would appreciate bug reports, even better pull requests to fix them. Okay. But that's fine. You've got more time than money. Great. For folks that have more money than time, okay, we have these offerings. At the end of the day, all we want to do is solve this problem for people. We want to automate database schema change. That's it. Whether we do it, either way, whether somebody pays us for the software or not, we're getting something. Mm-hmm. Because if it solves somebody's problem, all right, Jerry and Stephanie, they got this horrible, horrible problem and they solve it with Liquibase. Okay. Even if they do it with community, they're going to tell people about it. And hell, maybe they might get certified. We've got learn.liquibase.com. You can get certified for Liquibase fundamentals, put it on your LinkedIn profile. Yay. But that tells other people about it. All right. And so we're okay with that because developers are a little chatty. I don't know if you notice. They like talking about what they're doing.
Chatty to a certain degree, yeah.
Well, when it's working out, when things are bad, they're not so chatty. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Carry on. No, you go ahead.
No, please finish what you're going to say.
Well, it's at the end of the day, we've got to have, we got to take care of both sides of the house. Yeah. And so where we go with Liquibase Hub, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But we know that it has a lot of value in Liquibase Enterprise running in somebody's data center. So we decided to SaaSify it and we'll see where it goes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the learning stuff we have is free. The product is free. Hub is going to be free. Go ahead and try it out. Mm-hmm. What do you have to lose? And that's mm-hmm. that's kind of where we're taking our approach. We have totally gotten rid of this enterprise sales model. We still have mm-hmm. salespeople, of course.
They're having to fill in a form kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, but it's like they're not going and taking people out to dinner. No. They're not getting on planes, you know? And so what are they doing? Well, they are continuing to be trusted advisors. They're working with executives, you know, and that's what our enterprise sales team, that's where the real value is. Mm. It's not about taking somebody to Topgolf and picking up a beer tab or something, steak dinner. That's not the value. The value is, hey, I'm going to help you, executive person. I'm going to help you, leader, be a leader.
Yep. Okay. So apart from Hub, just to wrap up, are there any other features that you'd like people to know about happening in the next 6 months or so? Or when will Hub be kind of on general release, I guess?
November 21st. I'm sorry. Did I say November? Screw that. September.
Okay.
I got that wrong.
So in about 6 weeks. Okay.
Yeah, 6 weeks. The beta's there. I don't know how we're going to gate it, but if you blow us up on Twitter at Liquibase, I've got a feeling that our community team could hook you up.
Cool. Okay.
Not just you, but the listeners, anybody. Look, we want more and more people to look at it. We are going to limit the beta initially because we want to give the folks that have contributed to Liquibase and the believers, we want to show our love and affection to them and let them
probably
check it
know
out.
The product better anyway. So
yes, we would like to really focus on folks that know Liquibase but want to learn Hub as opposed to people that want to learn Liquibase and Hub.
Okay, cool. Okay, good to hear what you've been up to. And the NoSQL support and things like that is also very interesting. I think that's where a lot of people are putting their data these days. So,
absolutely, and it's a nightmare. I mean, when you've got, you know, let's talk about Mongo. You've got all these JSON docs.
Yeah.
And you've got an update to the application. Maybe you're a chucklehead and assume that every user in the, you know, every document represents a user and users only have one mailing address or one physical address.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I remember these problems in the past. Yeah.
So even though there's no schema, there still needs to be changes.
Yeah. Everyone should check out the assumptions that developers make. Various repositories are good for nuggets like this. Cool. Great. Thank you very much for your time. And
of course. Thank you.
Thanks for being so so visually interesting as well. My test ones of this have made me realize I've been the most boring looking person on the call both times. So,
Hey, it's not a contest. You know, it never is. You're doing great. I'm proud of you.
That was my interview with Robert Reeves of Liquibase. So news from me, I have been working on my streams are now in progress. I had part one of the solo adventure where I play games solo. Doing Ex Novo came out on Monday. You can find that on Twitch.com/SoloAdventurer or on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/ChristianSchiller. That is a city building game, part one. Part two should be coming in the next few days. And on Twitch.com/DXPOSE, Dexpose, that is. And again, on the YouTube channel, you can find my walkthrough of the developer experience for Document Node. Kind of writing tool. I went down a slightly different path this episode, but I wanted to try it. Aside from that, I have been interviewing people for KubeCon this week, so some of those will be coming out soon. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to cover the event. Covering remote events, online events, is really not that compelling, I must admit, so I'm not entirely sure what I'm going to do yet. We shall see. And I think that's about it for now. A few other things still in the pipeline. But for now, yes, if you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on YouTube. Please subscribe for my podcast. Please subscribe to my newsletter. Please rate, review, share wherever you have seen or heard this. Keep an eye on christianchiller.com for more updates. And until next time, thank you very much for joining.